The great sage Sukadeva Goswami said, hereafter I shall describe the dimensions, characteristics, and forms of the six islands belonging, beginning with the island of Paksha. As Sumeru Mountain is surrounded by Jambudvip is also surrounded by an ocean of salt water. The breadth of Jambudvip is 100,000 yojanas, and the breadth of the saltwater ocean is the same. As a moat around a fort is sometimes surrounded by garden-like forests, the saltwater ocean surrounding Jambudvip is itself surrounded by Pakshadvip. The breadth of Pakshadvip is twice that of the saltwater ocean, in other words, 200,000 yojanas. On Pakshadvip, there is a tree shining like gold as tall as a jumbo tree on Jumbo. At its root is a fire with seven flames. It is said it is because this tree is a Pakshadvip tree that I have called Pakshadvip. Pakshadvip was governed by Jiva, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyavrata. He endowed the seven islands with the names of the seven sons. I divided the islands among the sons and then retired from active life to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The seven islands, Varshas, are named according to the names of those seven sons. Shiva, Ayavasa, Subhadra, Shanta, Shema, Amrita, and Abhaya. In those seven tracts of land, there are seven mountains and seven rivers. The mountains are named Manikuta, Vajrakuta, Sena, Jyotishma, Suparna, Niranyastiva, and Meghamala. And the rivers are named Aruna, Rimna, Angarasi, Savitri, Suptabhata, Rikambara, and Satyambara. One can immediately free from material contamination by touching or bathing those rivers in the four castes of people who live in Pakshadvip, the Hamsas, Patangas, who would Vayanas and Satyangas purify themselves in that way. The inhabitants of Pakshadvip live for 1,000 years. They are beautiful like the demigods, and they also get children like the demigods. By completely performing the rituals and ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas, and by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as represented by the sun god, deity in the sun, which is a heavenly planet. According to general understanding, there originate three deities of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and people with 400 knowledge consider Vishnu no better than Brahma or Shiva. This conclusion, however, is invalid, as stated in the Vedas. Ishtapurtam Bhagavad Jayamana Vishnu Devarti Bhuvana Sinadi Tad Eva Agni Tad Vayu Tad Surya Tad Chandrama Agni Sarvadakata. This means that the Supreme Lord, who accepts and enjoys the results of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, who maintains the entire creation, who supplies the necessities of all living entities, and who is the central point of all creation, is Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu expands as the demigods known as Agni, Vayu, Surya, Chandra, who are simply parts and parcel of his body. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, devotees who worship the demigods with firm faith worship me also, but according, not according to regulated principles. In other words, if one worships the demigods but does not understand the relationship between the demigods and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his worship is regular. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, I am the only enjoyer of ritualistic ceremonies. It may be argued that devadas are as important as Lord Vishnu because the names of the demigods are different names of Vishnu. This, however, is not a sound conclusion, for it is contradictory. In the Vedic literatures, the Vedas declare the demigods of the moon, demigod of the moon, Chandra, came from the mind of Narayana, and the sun god came from his eyes, the controlling deities appearing in the light air came from Narayana, and the controlling deity, the fire was generated from his mouth. Rajapati, Lord Brahma, came from Narayana. Indra came from Narayana, and the eight vasas, the 11 expansions of Lord Shiva, and the 12 Adityas also came from Narayana. In Smriti Vedic literature, it is also said, Brahma, Sambhu, Surya, and Indra are all merely products of the power of the Supreme Personality of God, and this is also true of many other demigods whose names are not mentioned here. When the cause of manifestation is annihilated, these different expansions of Narayana's potency will merge into Narayana. In other words, all these demigods will die. Their living force will be withdrawn and they will merge into Narayana. Therefore, it should be concluded that Lord Vishnu, not Brahma or Shiva, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As a government office, he is sometimes accepted as the entire government, although he is actually a departmental manager. So the demigods, having achieved power of attorney from Vishnu, act on his behalf, although they are not as powerful as he. All the demigods must work under the orders of Vishnu. Therefore, it is said, Ekalarishvara Krishna Arasa Vritya. The only master is Lord Krishna, or Lord Vishnu, and all of the servants, who are exactly according to his orders. The distinction between Lord Vishnu and the demigods is also expressed in Bhagavad Gita. Those who worship demigods go to the planets of demigods, whereas the worshippers of Lord Krishna and Lord Vishnu go to the planets of Vaikuntha. These are the statements of the Smriti. Therefore, the idea that Lord Vishnu is on the same level as the demigods is in contradiction to the Shastras. Demigods are not supreme. The supremacy of the demigods depend on the mercy of Lord Narayana. So here begins the description of the other dvipas. Jamadeva was described with its different varshas, and now the other six dvipas with their oceans are also described. So the central island is Jambudvipa, and around that is an ocean of salt water, the same breadth as the Jambudvipa. And then there is an island. So technically, this island is shaped like a donut. It is circular, and it surrounds this ocean of salt water, and it in turn is surrounded by another round ocean like a ring, and that again is surrounded by another island, and that by another ring. So there are a series of dvipas, or even continents, which are circular in shape, like rings. So Jambudvipa is the round one in the middle, and around that we have saltwater ocean, and then we have Plakshadweep with the big Plaksha tree on it. Just as Jambudweep is named after a big Jambu tree on it, Plakshadweep has a big Plaksha tree on it, a huge Plaksha tree. And Priyavrata had sons, and he put a son in charge of each of these islands. And then this particular island is divided up into seven varshas, just like we have nine varshas here in Jamadvipa. There are seven varshas named after the seven sons or grandsons of Priyavrata. So they divide up that circular continent into seven parts, divided by mountain ranges, and each with a particular river. So in this way, all of the islands are formed with seven divisions, seven mountains, and seven rivers, with a ruler in charge of each one. So
itself is not so important to understand all the names of all the mountains and the rivers and the suns, etc. But one after the other in this chapter, these will be related. As we see that these are all descendants of Priyavrata, his different sons took charge of the different islands. So, therefore we assume that they were all followers of Dharma, and there's a population on each of these different islands. And each of these islands is huge, because the as we expand outwards, each of these islands becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. So the dimensions were mentioned here, that there's an ocean of salt water, 100,000 yojanas, or 800,000 miles wide. And then there is a continent twice that big, 200,000 yojanas. Then there's another ocean, 200,000 yojanas. Then there's another continent, 400,000 yojanas wide. And there's another ocean, 4,000, like this. So it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So these are huge continents and huge oceans, we say. One after the other, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. This constitutes the surface of Bhumandala, which is like a big disc, more or less flat with mountain ranges in it, and Mount Meru in the middle. So it was described also that Priyavrata himself produced these oceans by using a chariot, and he went around in his chariot in a circular motion, and created these different oceans, one after the other. And each of these oceans is filled with a different liquid. So the first ocean is the salt water ocean, then we get other oceans like the milk and the yogurt and the ghee and the sugar water oceans and the fresh water oceans. So one after the other, we have different types of oceans here. So this expands until we get the outer continents, outer Vipas. And of course that's not all, because of that there's more expanse, a huge expanse. There's a Lopaloka mountain range beyond that, and that is very high, and the sun cannot penetrate beyond that range, and beyond that, as big as there is inside the radius or diameter. Outside also, that same size is there, but it's all dark. Nobody lives there on the outside after the Lopaloka mountain range. So, and then that extends to the edge of the universe, so to speak. And then beyond that, there's a drop, and then there's the Garbhodak ocean underneath. And simultaneously going down, if we go below Bhuloka, it is not flat exactly. There is some caverns down there, and those caverns are the other planetary systems, lower planetary systems like Sutala, Atala, Talatala, etc. Down to Patala Loka at the bottom. And then after that, then there's space, and then there's Garbhodak ocean at the bottom. So, and then above we have Mount Meru, and above that we have Bhuvar Loka, then we have Svarga Loka, and Mahajana, Tapa, and Satya Loka at the top. So that constitutes the whole of the universe. So, here particularly is described the Bhumandala. So we had a description of the Mount Meru and the Jambudvipa with its varshas and its mountain ranges, etc., including Varsha. And then here we have, this chapter deals with the other dvipas on Bhumandala. So this is a description of the whole universe, of which we are a small portion called Varsha. Now there's nothing complicated about this description, because it's very symmetrical, and it's more or less flat with little mountain ranges and water, etc. Everything is described in terms of dimensions, so one can actually draw a picture of it very easily. The only difficulty for us is it doesn't look like we can see this place, and it does not conform to our modern conception that the Earth is a globe floating in space going around the sun. That is the difficulty. But as far as the description here, it all fits together very nicely. So So there's no real difficulty in understanding what is said here. And so our target is simply comment on this and explain the different dimensions and how the dvipas and islands and everything are situated. They of course do not explain how this would correspond or not correspond to our modern perception of a spherical type earth floating in space. So that is where the difficulty comes, how to explain this in terms of that. It's difficult because we would have to accept that scripture doesn't make a mistake. So if scripture isn't making a mistake, then who's making a mistake? Is the earth round, flat, spherical, or what? Square? What is it? So if we accept it's spherical, then that would contradict this. Then we say scripture is not correct. And if we say it's flat, then people will laugh at us. Because they say, well, look, we have satellite pictures, etc., and you're not accepting that. And you go in an airplane, go around, and you can see it's not flat, it's circular, it's spherical. So you get caught in this argument of either rejecting the scripture or being a laughing stock by denying reality of your vision or whatever like that. So that's where the controversy arises, how to correlate modern vision with the scripture without having to reject the scripture. Nobody has really succeeded in doing that, as far as I know. There are attempts to do so. So for instance, there is an attempt by some scholars to say that Varsha is a spherical thing sitting upon Jambudvipa. So that way at least you've got a sphere there. But it's not explaining the other things. What are these dvipas? What are these oceans? Why don't we see the milk ocean? Why doesn't the milk ocean ferment after one day and go rotten? Where does all the ghee come from? Where are the cows to milk to get the milk to get the ghee and the yogurt from? And why do they? How do they change the water, the yogurt every day so it's fresh? And things like that, questions will arise. So, if one takes it literally, there are a lot of problems. The others take it symbolically or metaphorically, that it represents something else, which is also a plausible explanation, because sometimes we can do that in terms of scripture. So, how to interpret it? Symbolically, of course, it's open to wide interpretation because the scripture itself doesn't give too much of a hint about it. However, attempts have been made to do so. So that the dvipas, for instance, can be compared to the orbits of the planets. So that the Bhumandala is basically the path of the planets around the sun. So there we get orbits more or less like dvipas and oceans, etc. But it's also taken more or less not from the sun as the center, but Earth as the center. Because we see that the sun is also going around Mount Meru. So this makes it a little more complicated, but not impossible. So in other words, the Bhagavatam is taking a geocentric representation of our solar system rather than a heliocentric, which you can do because we look at everything and it seems to be related to us. It is going around in certain directions or whatever, so you can relate it in that way and you can calculate everything that way. You can come out, you can predict the movement of planets and stars and sun and moon. Even if you don't accept everything that's going around the sun, you can say it's all relative to us, it's going around the earth, and yes, looks like that. So therefore you can get your same results in terms of calculations and predict when the sun is going to be in a certain place by even taking the earth as a center. The mathematics is probably a little more complicated, that's all. Because your orbits are going to be a little more irregular, etc. Nevertheless, it's done. So that is exactly what the astronomers in ancient times did. They made theories, but they didn't actually tell us which they were calculating from sun in the center or earth in the center, whatever. But they have mathematical formulas using what calculus and trigonometry and this and that formulas, and they calculate how the planets move and they can predict their movements in relation to what we see in the sky. So that is there. So we take the Earth more or less as a central thing, and everything going around that, and we can calculate the orbits of the planets, etc. So Sataputta did that in terms of the Earth, not the Sun, and calculated the orbits of the planets. So if we calculate the orbit of any single planet except the Moon in relation to the Earth, and we take the Earth as a center and we calculate, they're going to have very strange patterns, which are more or less like spirograph patterns. You have a little thing, and they go like this if we calculate it, and they're like a little flower. So they have an inner and an outer orbit with a sort of pattern like this if we trace them in relation to the Earth. Of course, Earth is always moving around also in terms of towards the Sun, so we have to take that. That's why it becomes like that, because it's going around like that, and the planets are moving in relation to the Earth, plus in relation to the Sun. So therefore, you have strange little orbits, look like flower patterns, not for each one, with an inner orbit and an outer limit and an outer limit of the orbit. So Sataputta has taken those as dvipas, the inner and outer orbits, as the dvipas, and then between them, then we got the island, the oceans. And according to the yojanas in terms of miles, etc., it more or less corresponds, he says. That was his conclusion. So he's taken that theory, which is speculative, of course, but interesting and makes sense. So that's one way of interpreting it. Of course, he didn't explain why we have a milk ocean, a yogurt ocean, a ghee ocean, whatever. But we could relate this to densities of planets or whatever. Who knows? It could be. Maybe if somebody's interested in taking the density of yogurt, milk, and all these different substances, then we can take the weight of the different planets and compare them, and maybe we'll find out some relationship there also. Who knows? So anyway, this is just a theory, but that's what he concluded. This, of course, is taking it all metaphorically. Other devotees have tried to interpret how to make a model of the Sun going around Mount Meru and Varsha being here. It doesn't quite work because you put Mount Meru in the middle, which is supposed to create day and night, but doesn't quite do so, because you get some sort of shadow, but not a real darkness, so it doesn't quite work as far as, so there's no explanation of night in this analogy. This Mount Meru used as a shadow doesn't seem to work too good. And also, the Sun is always on the same level, so it has no rising and setting if Earth is flat. So it's always up in the sky, going around like this, periodically going around Mount Meru. So again, it's not rising and setting of the Sun is not explained in that model. If we take it flat, which is obvious even to the people that, even to the explanation here, obviously, that Vyasadeva wrote, it's obvious that you can't explain rising and setting of the Sun in terms of the Sun going around like this. So it's not that they didn't consider it. So why it's like that, no one's really explained. So it is one model. So to try to explain it, then that's why they put the circular spherical bar marsh. So that way you could get some sort of day and night created by the shadow of the Earth or whatever. Or if not circular, that at least maybe hemispherical, like that. That's another version of it. So there's different speculations about it. But I don't think it's ever mentioned this exactly. Like we have a little spherical bar of varsha sitting on top of a boom bundle like that. It's never mentioned anywhere. That's what they're forced to do in order to get an explanation of day and night and rising and setting of sun. So there are some problems with this model in terms of, obvious problems in terms of working out day and night, rising and setting of sun, etc., apart from other things. So those are some of the problems involved. And then, of course, there is the problem of what we see actually in the sky contradicts what is here, that doesn't mention the spherical nature, etc. We do, however, find in other places that this spherical type of Earth is accepted. Bhugola is the spherical Earth. The globe of the Earth is accepted. And, of course, the famous pictures we see of Varaha lifting up the Earth on his tusk, it's actually like the Moon, and it's a disc on his tusk, it's a circular thing on his tusk. So there we see it's not just a flat surface, it's actually a round thing that's on his tusk. So there is that conception of a spherical earth also. So why they've explained only this one here, that we don't know. So this is one explanation. And then of course we have the other with the spherical earth, etc., which is also used in astronomy by the different astronomers. They often use a spherical type of planet. And even in ancient times, I think in Aryabhata and others, and different mathematicians and astronomers, they concluded there was a spherical form, you know. So of course that's more modern, let's say 200 AD or 800 AD or something. They came to these conclusions. So still we have this version here, the Puranic version, which is similar in different Puranas. This is also here. So the difficulty lies in course in correlating everything and trying to justify it in terms of modern observations. That's the main difficulty. But in itself it is pretty straightforward in terms of islands.
Huh?
Well, there, that's another chapter. The above. No, they're above. They're above. So they're rotating around Mount Meru in the higher. In other words, the nakshatras and the planets are in Svargaloka, above the Bhumandala, at a certain distance. And in between is Bhuvarloka. And then above that we have higher planet races all the way up to Brahmaloka. They're all above. And they're all rotating around Mount Meru.
One concept that they consider Earth as a planet. The solar system, the nine planets.
Yeah. Well, here we have, well, they're all planets also in the Vedic system. We have Bhuloka as one, and then we have the higher planetary systems like Svargaloka. We have all these different planets like Mercury and Venus, etc. They're all there. And they're all moving. But they're all revolving around Mount Meru in this version. Whereas in the modern version, everything's revolving around the sun. But of course, they're also revolving around the earth. The earth is also moving, and they're also revolving around the earth for the whole moon. Someone has pointed out, of course, that even this is a false concept, because that's assuming everything is stationary. And we have the sun here, and everything's moving around like this. But actually, the sun is not stationary. If we take that in relation to another galaxy, it's also going somewhere. So maybe it's falling up or it's going down, we don't know. It's going somewhere. And along with that, all the planets are going. So basically, everything is going in a spiral motion. Because if the sun is going like that, all the planets are going, they're all going like this around it, following it. And so it's actually going in spiral motion. So the flat version also is not true. So even modern conception, that's only a simplified version of something else. So somebody has explained that because of that, it's spiral like that. That's why we do have certain phenomena like the water going in a certain direction. That can be explained in terms of the movement going this way and the spiral motion of the planets. I mean, that's another conception. But anyway, even the modern conception is rather a simplified conception of the solar system, etc.
They have exactly which is Google Maps.
Yeah. So of course we can deny that, but that's a little bit of a difficult to do in the modern world.
I think the satellites are not able to take up pictures of this Russia's
like, No. So that's why there's a difficulty in accepting this literally. Because we never get to see the other oceans. Of course, we could always say that we're always limited by our particular mountain range, so we can't go beyond Varsha. But still, why do we see a spherical Earth then, a circular, a spherical Varsha in the photographs? Did they make a mistake in all the photographs or whatever? Every time they take a photograph, there's an illusion taking place or whatever. We can't say that. But anyway, that problem is always there, so how do we solve that problem?
Well, if you think that the stars are revolving around Mount Meru, does it mean that the peak of Mount Meru goes up to Brahmaloka?
What's that?
When you say that the stars and other planets are going around Mount Meru, does it mean that, can you infer that the peak of Mount Meru is going up to Brahmaloka?
Going up?
The peak of Brahmaloka?
No. It's below, it's much below Svarga Loka.
Where is the free world? We can get the
free world. Brahma has a summer palace on top of it along with the Devatas.
Is that the inscription in the scripture comes from you, one universe comes from Narayana's world? Hmm? That the scripture?
It's our universe.
One universe.
It's one universe. And around the whole thing there's a big shell of seven layers.
So where is Hiranyagarbha?
Huh?
Hiranyagarbha, you see, that's also. See, Hiranyagarbha, the golden egg.
Oh, that's the, in one sense, when the Lord glances, that's the whole Mahatattva. That's everything. All the universes together.
The question mentioned here, is it the same as that Gandhadasha is?
Hmm?
The question, what is mentioned here? Is it the same as that what the Vishnu lies on?
Apparently. Further than the sun. Yeah.
But in terms of the one calculation, it's quite.
Yeah. So that, of course, I don't think anyone's explained. Sadhakuru explained in terms of elevation, not in terms of horizontal distance. Because the moon goes at an orbit around the, or an angle. Its orbit is angular. It's not flat. It's kind of at a tilt. So the vertical distance is more than compared to the sun.
What's the purpose of the explaining this?
Just to show that the everything is arranged by the Supreme Lord and the places in these systems for all the living entities. That's all.
Yeah,
so that can be done. Again, that's another spiritual place. The only difficulty is to accommodate that in terms of Svarga. So, yes, one can go to physical places, but the enjoyment will not be available unless one has the punya, that's all. Just like we cannot enjoy in the water like the fish. Yeah, it's strange they cannot do it. Usually when you develop something based on that, you can do more things and more things and more things. So ultimately the only thing they've accomplished is living in an orbit around the Earth at a certain distance for years on end. That's the maximum they've done. If you go beyond that, it looks like they haven't really built on anything after that. So whether they went or not, I don't know. But, you know, some astronauts say, yes, I did go. Others... maybe
India,
questionable, whatever, we don't know. We don't know what the answer
is. India sent a Chandrayaan 2 years back, unmanned spacecraft.
Yeah. So, like, you know, you develop a car and you get more developed models and more developed models. Well, why didn't they develop higher models of rockets once they went to the moon? Why didn't they make more developed rockets so they could stay there longer? That doesn't make any sense. And of course, they went, what, 6 times or something, they said? I think there were several times they went anyway, up to 6 times, but then suddenly it all stopped and now they can't do it anymore. It's a little strange. Yeah, but again, techniques are more advanced. Anyway, there's some difficulties in doing that. One is fuel. Because the further you go, the more fuel you need. The more fuel you have, the heavier it gets. The heavier it gets, the more fuel you need. So there's an impossible problem that I don't think they've solved.
No, they have a docking station.
Well, that's what they were trying to do, I think. They have a docking station, they put all the fuel up there, and go in more and higher and higher orbits outside the Earth and keep loading fuel up, and then you can stop at one station and the next station, load up your fuel again, and then go, and then come back. I don't know, someone can calculate it to see if they've made something that is that efficient that they could hold that much fuel and come back also. If you examine, oh, apparently they destroyed all the rocket plants that they had. Strangely enough, from that time, those particular models, they're not there anymore. The plans for those things are not there, they're not available. If one were to examine, then you could actually see if they had provisions for the fuel and how they did it. But it's not available, it's all destroyed.
Yeah.
but probably that would be a difficulty to explain how to get the fuel in there. Well, the sun god, of course, is just a representation of the Supreme Lord. That's mentioned here, actually. So, yeah, they worship the sun god, but they understand that he is a representation of Vishnu. So, in other words, the various deities of the different planets are actually vibhutis of the Supreme Lord. So they recognize them as such.
Transition with Bhagavad Gita,